He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
So imagine he's playing that and you're like 5 feet away. I mean, you have to cast your mind back to the good old days before Bridgegate and Governor Christie and population drain and the nation's highest taxes, when Jersey really was defined by that man, by Bruce, by our other friend Bon Jovi, by Jason Kidd and the Nets, the Sopranos. But there's nobody like Springsteen. Saturday, he reminded, a group of very lucky people happened to be on Ocean Avenue at the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park, of his love for the Garden State, Asbury Park particularly. Just goes there, he gets on stage with Grushetsky's House Rockers. The place is jam-packed, hot as hell, and everybody just loving it, loving Bruce, loving being in Jersey. The good old days. I saw him at the Trade Winds once in Seabright. And my Mike West, who worked in my place I had up there, Rough Point, in Navasink, he said he'd heard Bruce was going to be at the Trade Winds. So we got there, we got right in front. And lo and behold, he shows up. Wow. 2 hour concert. That's wow. Like a private concert.
Uh-huh.
John Lennon gave me a private concert once. It was like that.
Was that?
That was in a hotel room in San Francisco.
Just you and him?
Just you and Yoko.
And what did he say?
John, he did, Woman is the End of the World.
You say it like it's no big deal. You're like, oh, yeah, me, John Lennon, we're hanging out in the hotel room.
Yeah, 1950s rock and roll songs.
He just started playing them.
He started playing. Before I get on with the show, I just have to send my condolences to the parents of these four beautiful young ladies, part of a group of eight, all in their mid-20s from near my hometown, Suffolk County. Just awful what happened. They go to this wine tour. They want a drink, so they get a driver, a limousine. They do everything right. And then the driver makes an illegal U-turn, and you see the pictures of it? The limo just got T-boned by that red pickup. Must have been going 80 miles an hour, just whacked into the center of that stretch limo, killing four of them.
You know what's so infuriating is there's no reason to be doing it. I mean, it's not like this is new. The campaign against drunk driving didn't begin yesterday. It began 25 years ago. So what are you doing? If you're behind if you're plastered, call a cab or call a friend to pick you
up.
And
now
it's
with
so easy.
Uber especially.
Yeah, there's no reason.
There's no reason at all. And Stephen Romeo, 55-year-old guy, driving this pickup. I heard he tried to flee on foot
from
the wreck.
Yeah, so here they are. Can you imagine? So he T-bones this limo. You can imagine the women who are alive still inside screaming for help. And this guy runs into the woods to get away. Of course, the minute the cops got there, it wasn't very long. They found him.
You know what I thought of? I mean, among other things, thank God the driver wasn't an undocumented immigrant. That whole thing would have been, imagine that, there would have been a lynch party. Now I hope people understand that these things happen, and when someone does something, they are scum dogs, whoever they are. Stephen Romeo, U.S. citizen. You know, Suffolk County and Nassau County lead the state in alcohol-related crashes and fatalities.
Yeah, well, most of that is because of what we see in the summertime there, because so many people go out there for the summer, and that's when most of these accidents happen.
But when I was in high school, West Babylon High School, they always beefed up all of the police forces during the summertime. Because I remember a lot of my teachers moonlighted in the summertime as officers for the various jurisdictions. And it would seem to me that you would flood the streets. I know that out at the East End, the cops are all over it. Now, here it's a more rural area, Cutchogue, slightly more country roady, but my goodness, a total douchebag speeding.
Well, he's a murderer, is what
he's a murderer. He's a multiple murderer.
This wasn't.
But he's only charged. They haven't charged him with that yet. They're charging him with drunk driving. But
well,
he's driving while intoxicated, which is a misdemeanor. But they'll definitely upgrade that to vehicular homicide at the very least.
And, you know, most of these traffic stops they do are at night. This happened 5:19. This is the afternoon.
Oh, so it's broad daylight.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I didn't realize that. The two counties accounted for the largest percentage of alcohol-related fatalities. 14.2% of all alcohol-related homicides were Suffolk County and 7.3% of Nassau County. Just dreadful. I mean, come on, wake up, people. Wake up. And to the parents, oh, my God, my heart breaks. And the victims all seem so perfect. And as the father of five, I swear to God, it is so horribly distracting. All the big news we do, this is the real news. And you have to hold your breath, like prom season or wedding season. You have to hold your breath that this doesn't, like, just ruin the whole world for you.
Two of the women living just houses away from each other in Smithtown. Yeah.
Damn shame. Damn shame. I hope they hang him by his nuts. I really do. All right, let me get to the first topic, and this is the one, ladies and gentlemen, at 866-RL, that I want you to participate. I was on Fox and Friends, and a lot of people have been calling me because of my relationship with Donald Trump, and he is my friend, and I have said it time and time again. We love the guy. We love his family. We love how he is to me and to my family. So from the bottom of my heart, I say to you, Donald, that you owe every prisoner of war an explanation. You have to explain to the other POWs, put aside John McCain for a second. You have to explain to all the people who ever were incarcerated because of their service to their nation. And you have to tell them that you did not mean what you seemed to say, equating those who suffered the worst of war, being captured and abused by the enemy, equating them to some kind of second-rate GI. I say this to you as my friend, as my old TV boss. You have to tell us, please, that was all a bad joke, that you lost your temper, that you never intended to insult John McCain's noble service to this country, that you know he's a brave Navy aviator, that he was shot down 23 missions, 5 years a slave to abuse, isolation in a rotten North Vietnamese torture chamber. I mean, Senator McCain is the epitome of a hero, Donald. He is. Whether you disagree with this man, his politics, I don't care about that. His service must be sacred, especially to those of us who never served. I don't want to pile on to you, Donald, you know, because I say we love you. But you have to consider the impact of your words. Consider the impact of your words on the other former POWs who sacrificed so much fighting America's wars. They are revered. They are above reproach. You must say in no uncertain terms. I've heard what you've been saying this morning, but you are still equivocating. You must say very specifically that you never intended so terrible, so insulting a distinction between warriors who've been captured and warriors who are uncaptured. Here's Paul in New York. What's on your mind, Paul? Thanks for calling.
Harold, thanks for taking my call. Listen, I know Trump is a smart man. I don't take anything away from there. And I have a friend of mine, Navy Captain Eugene Red McDaniel, who was POW in Vietnam. Tortured the hell out of, like, all of them were. And for John McCain, he was in solitary confinement. So I have nothing, the highest respect for Senator McCain. I disagree with him a little on the issue about American prisoners of war and the committee was on back in 91, 92. But even John LaBoulier mentioned that last night in Fox. But he went through hell, as all these guys did. And I'm a Vietnam veteran, you know, no hero. But my father's in World War II. So he does owe everybody an apology. I'll leave it like that, but I'm kind of really ticked off on that because it's bad enough they beat us, the press beat us up when we came back and said all the wrong
things. Oh, man, brother. I'm telling you, bringing tears to my eyes, Paul. You know,
I'm down at the war on Veterans Day, Memorial Day for Verizon Veterans Advisory Board, and 58,300 names. I can't even begin to imagine, Geraldo. Every name on that wall had a family, brother, sister, uncle, mother, and it's still with all of us today. But again, thanks for all you do on the radio, and I'm going to get off the line.
Amen. Thanks for calling, bye-bye. Brother. Thank you for calling. Don't let your pride destroy your dream, Donald. I'm telling you. This is far worse than your sloppy statement about Mexican immigrants. Then with the statement about the Mexicans and the drug dealers and the rapists and all that, you could wrap your stereotyping, because that's what you were doing in Katie's murder, the 32-year-old got murdered in San Francisco, in El Chapo's escape. You could say, see, look how bad Mexico is. You could count on the support of nativists and xenophobes and cable pundits and a whole slice of the Republican Party and the polemicists like Ann Coulter, others opposed to immigration reform. Here, as I am sure you are painfully discovering, there is no constituency to support this obscene notion that John McCain is not a hero because he was captured. You must, Donald, apologize for your misstatements. If you're not going to apologize, if you meant those statements, that stuff about not considering POWs heroes and branding Mexican immigrants rapists, then the intense political fallout, this severe damage to your presidential aspirations, that, I'm telling you, my friend, will be the least of the consequences. If that's the case, that you stand by these remarks, then aside from embarrassing your loyal friends, you've put your legacy and your whole reputation in jeopardy. This is not a joke. You must apologize. It is 18 minutes after 10 o'clock. I'm glad to be back from Mexico. We could talk about that too. But 866-ARALDO, 866-437-2536. For now, let's stick on Trump and McCain. You have the Trump from this morning on the Today Show. Welcome back, everybody. 23 minutes after 10 o'clock. Araldo here, along with Noam Layden. We're talking about Donald Trump's refusal to apologize for his, you know, you can't even call them incendiary. They weren't incendiary as much as they were just gut-wrenchingly inappropriate. His statement that Trump was not a hero. Do you have the Today Show? When you have it, let me know. On the meantime, I'll take Dan in New Jersey. What do you think about Dan?
Yeah, good morning, Geraldo. Yeah, I think Trump is done. I think this comment shows why a business guy can't be in politics. He has no, he won't allow a filter. But those comments were just way beyond anything anybody should say. And I recall it's what your feelings on. I think he just showed himself.
You know, I agree. If he doesn't apologize here, it'll be the doom. But I think it's worse than that, and I appreciate it, Dan. Thank you very much for calling 866-ARALDO. It's not just what he has done to damage his presidential aspirations and this surprising run that he has to the top of the charts. This is much more basic. This is about his legacy. Do you want every time you look at the Trump brand, rather than celebrating an American entrepreneur, do you want to be reminded of someone who thinks that POWs are less than, active duty guys who don't get captured? Maybe the guys who don't get captured weren't captured because of the heroism of those like John McCain who were captured. You know, you got to put it that way. All right, here's what Trump said. He was very feisty and unapologetic on the Today Show. Here he is.
Well, I'm not a fan of John McCain. If you saw what I said and if you saw the press conference afterwards, Savannah and the media just has done such a false number, as usual. And
I like people that weren't captured. Would you say that to John McCain's face?
No, and then if you go on, Matt, see, that's what you don't do.
No, I said I'm using one exchange.
Excuse me, Matt, because you're the media and you do the same thing. The next sentence was, he is a war hero. I said that, but they never want to play it, and you don't want to play it.
Well, why would you say the first thing?
Excuse me.
Why would you say the first part?
Savannah started it off by saying, I said that he wasn't a war hero. I didn't say that.
We did run the part where you said he is a war hero. So please don't say that we didn't, because we did.
Well, then why did Savannah start off by saying, I said that he was not a war hero? I never said that. I said he was a war hero, Matt. So you misrepresent just like everybody else. Cheryl Atkinson did a major expose yesterday in the newspapers. She's highly respected. She said that Trump is being mistreated on this four times. He said that McCain is a war hero. I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with what he's doing on the border. He's terrible. And I do have a problem with the fact with the illegal immigration is a disaster. And he's doing a horrible job for the vets. Matt, I see the vets. They come to me. These are powerful, wonderful people, and they're crying. They don't know what to do. They're lost because of what we're doing. Frankly, illegal immigrants are treated better than many of our vets.
You know, to say it's about illegal immigrants, now to try to bring that in, that's a perfectly legitimate issue. But to try to use that as the way to modify or mitigate or alleviate some of the misery caused by his first statement, I think is disingenuous. And I'm giving him every benefit of the doubt. I love the guy. But this is so disappointing. And why can't he say, you know something? I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it the way you're taking it. I didn't mean it. And I apologize if I gave you the false impression that I meant that the POWs are somehow less than the people who were not captured. I didn't mean it. I'm sorry. Why is it so hard to say that? I don't get it. I don't. To me, that kind of pride. Give me some of those quotes on pride, like the pride. Give it the.
Well,
anyway.
Well, isn't so much of his appeal is that he doesn't apologize?
But please, if you hurt the feelings of people who have to be revered, then there's no charm in that false pride. There's no charm. What's the upside? You hurt the feelings of people who were in prison camps, North Vietnamese prison camps. Or Korean prison camps if they still survive, or German prison camps if they still survive. What's the upside in causing them upset? I mean, my God, can't we have anything that is sacred in this country? Anything? Of all the things that have to be revered, John McCain said first in, first out, when he was given an opportunity for early release because his father was an admiral, a Navy admiral. And he said, nope, I'm staying, even though they were torturing him. And you see, his hands are deformed now. I love the guy. I mean, he's a lot of his. I hate the fact that he wrote the immigration reform bill of 2007 and then when he ran for president said they wouldn't vote for my own bill. That's the same beef I have against Marco Rubio, same exact scenario. But in McCain's case, for God's sakes, ever we had a hero. That's the hero. That's the hero, the guy that stays there and suffered. And Trump, like me, dodging the draft with one kind of exemption or the next. For me, I spent a lifetime saying I'm sorry for not serving by becoming a war correspondent and putting myself in as much danger as I possibly could. It's all from my guilty conscience I have for not serving in Vietnam. That's what made me take all these chances. Go this front and that front and this front and Mexico tunnels and all the rest of it. Thank you for your calls. I'm going to get to them. I promise this is all about you and me now. It's all about you and me. We're going to talk about this. I do at some point want to bring up the Ashley Madison, the adulterer's website, and the fact that it's been hacked. I got to get a good laugh out of that one. So we'll have some comic relief a bit later. But it's all about Trump now and John McCain. And your calls. Right now, Noam's got the news. Okay, welcome back. We heard Donald Trump refusing to apologize, very feisty in his encounter this morning with Donald Trump. I mean, with Matt Lauer on the Today Show. So you heard Trump on the Today Show. John McCain now, here is what the senator said. He seems to take the high ground, even in the face of such intense provocation from the
Don. But those who are my senior ranking officers, people like Colonel Bud Day, Congressional Medal of Honor winner, those that inspired us to do things that we otherwise wouldn't have been capable of doing, those are the people that I think he owes an apology to. Families of those who have sacrificed in conflict and those who have undergone the prison experience in serving their country.
That's Senator McCain saying that Donald Trump doesn't have to apologize to him for saying, I like people who weren't captured. Rather, according to Senator McCain, Trump needs to tell veterans that he is sorry. And yet Trump is still accusing the senator of everything from abandoning the nation's veterans to making America less safe with his position on the border. What does Mickey in Queens think You're on 866 Geraldo. Mickey, what are you thinking about?
I think what Trump said was rather harsh, Geraldo, but over the years I've heard Farrakhan, Jeremiah Wright, and Sharpton say much worse. I know
I agree with that. I have too.
Right, but
you know
why
the difference, Mickey? They're not running for president.
It doesn't matter. The things that they said were much more incendiary. However, do you know what Hillel Hashem means?
What does it mean? No, I forget.
Something with God.
I got the God part.
Say it again. What was he? Cursing in Hebrew?
I don't think so. No, I think he was saying something positive.
Okay. About forgiveness?
Maybe.
Hi. Call us back, Mike, if you want to make that point. Hey, Bill, what's up in Brooklyn?
Good morning in Brooklyn here. We don't want his apology. This is ingrained arrogance. And this isn't even a thought in any part of the darkest corner of my mind. So I don't want a man like this representing us. What will he tell foreign countries that might get them a little too aggravated?
Wait,
let me finish, please. What bridges will he burn? I've been campaigning for him. I've gotten about 30, 40 people who haven't voted in 20 years to vote for him. No more. He's done. I don't want him as our world leader.
All right. Tell me more about the 20 people. Tell me more about what motivated you up until this.
Well, I think we've been stepped on all over the world, and I think we should secure our borders and protect the legal aliens that are coming in. I have nothing against Mexicans. They're some of the most wonderful people, the hardest workers. I employed them. They're the hardest workers I've seen in years. But I want the legal aliens to come in, not the illegal ones. I think we will be able to serve the people that are in this country a lot better.
Don't get too off the bat. So that's what motivated you. Now tell me about getting the other 20 people involved. How'd you do that?
Because they are just sick and tired of listening to what's been going on all around the world. So everybody hates us more than when Bush was here.
Now have you talked to any of them since this thing about the John McCain and the Beck?
No, not yet, but I will. I mean, we don't.
And what are you going to say?
I'm going to just get on a tear. This man can't represent us. I'm sorry. We don't want it.
All right, so that's what I'm talking
about. My father-in-law was a prisoner of war, 11 months, eating potatoes in a boxcar in World War II. Thank God he was captured by the Germans. Don't tell me this man's not here. It's not even a thought. It's not even a consideration.
All right, amen, brother. Thank you for the call. Excellent call. That's it, man. That's it. That's right there. You saw what I'm talking about. This is an existential threat to all of his political aspirations. But it is also an existential threat or a profoundly important threat to his legacy and his reputation as a person, as a man. But that's why I don't think he gets it. I mean, I appreciate his feistiness. I appreciate his pride. I'm a prideful person myself. I appreciate his instinct when pushed to push back, because I do that myself. I identify with him in so many ways. But this is something terrible. This is a terrible, terrible mistake he made.
You know, when they asked him one of the times they asked him for an apology over the weekend, all he wanted to talk about was the polling numbers, which apparently are great. Places like Nevada, he said that he was polling 30-40% with the Hispanic vote in Nevada. So he says all this nonsense about the comments he made about Mexicans. He says the Hispanic population in Nevada doesn't seem to care.
I want to see tomorrow's polls. You know, you're talking about this is such a watershed moment that a poll taken the day before this controversy is irrelevant right now. It is the next poll. And then how it wears from there, because I think that we may have seen, I think almost certainly we have seen the high watermark of this extraordinary run. And we're still a couple of weeks from the debates, the first debates on Fox News. Hi, Patricia in Westchester. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, Geraldo. I like Mr. Trump, and I'm not here to defend his statement. I thought it was very careless. But I wanted to say something about Senator McCain, and that, you know, he's had a habit in these last couple of years of going around referring to people as loonies and crazies. And what really tipped this off was McCain said that the followers of Trump were crazies. My point is, I'm sure there's a lot of veterans who, like Mr. Trump, would vote for Mr. Trump. So isn't he calling other veterans crazies, too? And when does John McCain realize that sometimes he's got to take a step back from his language, too?
Well, I think that that's a good point, but I don't you think there's a difference between what McCain said and did compared to what Donald said and did?
Well, I'll tell you what the difference is. McCain made a generic comment. He made a total comment that the people who follow Trump are crazies. Donald Trump was making a comment specifically about John McCain. I don't agree with it, but he wasn't attacking all veterans. He wasn't attacking all people who've been POWs. But when John McCain makes an attack, it's across the board. So everybody who has any interest in possibly voting for Trump is a crazy, period.
And so has this not affected your own preferences, Patricia?
I like Trump. I don't think that this comment, if I were going to vote for him, would change my mind. I thought it was careless. But, you know, he's probably having some second thoughts about how he, you know, presented that.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I think that he has to do something uncharacteristic. Now, remember, I had the conversation with him after the immigration comments. And I didn't do it purposely, did not do it on the air. I wanted him to know that this was coming from me, man to man, someone who's known him for decades. And I said, I don't want to tell you what he said. I said about the comment, you can still be against the undocumented immigrants. You could still be for a wall on the southern border. You could still be for, you know, drastically increasing border security and be for punishing Mexico for allowing all these people to either from Mexico or to from other places to traverse through Mexico. You could still be for that. You could still keep every single one of those potential voters in your camp. Just apologize for the sloppy language of stereotyping Mexicans as drug dealers and rapists. And please don't call me, folks, and give me nuances the way you're trying to give me nuances about what he said about John McCain. I'm not buying it. I wanted him to apologize. I wanted to take him to a Mexican restaurant. I thought that would be a great idea to show my friendship and my continued support. All he had to do was say, I'm sorry I didn't mean to speak with so broad a brush. That's all he had to do. And he, well, obviously he didn't. And this is worse. This is worse because, as I said at 10 o'clock, when you take on undocumented immigration, you have a natural constituency. You have 25% of the Republican Party automatically will flock to your banner. I think that undocumented immigration is the real reason the Tea Party got started in 2007 or so. So you have people will agree with you. Who agrees with this? There is no constituency to support this obscene notion that John McCain is not a hero because he was captured. There's none. There's none. You have to apologize for that. And if you meant that, that stuff about not considering POWs heroes, and you stand by these remarks, I'm telling you, this is way beyond embarrassing your loving family and your loyal friends and your potential supporters. This is putting your entire legacy and reputation in jeopardy. And you could yell at me, and I love you. You can yell, you could, Geraldo, hey, I'm telling you, I'm right. And you must apologize.
Welcome back. 77 WABC, the number 866 Geraldo. The topic, Donald Trump must apologize. He must apologize to John McCain specifically, but to everyone who ever was incarcerated by the enemy of the United States. Any prisoner of war must receive an apology from Donald Trump. And if I were him, I would have it handwritten, a note to each and every one that survives today. Each and every POW, that would be a good start. Wouldn't it be a wonderful way to do it? Let him sit down, write him out. I never meant to insult you or your service. And to Senator McCain specifically, he must say, I never meant to insult your service to this nation. We revere it, especially us draft dodgers. We revere your service and your suffering. Ken on Long Island, what's up, Ken? Thanks for calling.
Hey, Geraldo, how are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. I was in Canada over the weekend. You know who? I saw a Jays game. R.A. Dickey was the pitcher.
Oh,
they lost 3-2. All right, so what's on your mind, Ken?
Well, Well, I'll tell you what. I watched the interview on C-SPAN, and the thing he said about Senator McCain I think was in the heat of the moment. I'll tell you what. There was something he said about 5 minutes after that that actually offended me more than, and I'm a veteran myself, that offended me more than what he said
what
about Senator McCain.
What was it?
When he started talking about his religious experience and...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The fact that he only drinks wine when he goes to church and he has a little cracker.
He called it a cracker.
Right. And that was like the communion wafer. Yeah. That's when he...
Body of Christ, he's calling it a cracker.
Yeah, he's calling it a cracker. And that's how he gets rid of purges his sins, yeah.
And what's funny is, like I said, I think the Senator McCain comment was in the heat of the moment. Obviously, he has very strong feelings about the senator. But I think you got to see his true personality.
And describe that. What is his true personality? What did you see as a religious person and a veteran? What did you see when he said that?
I just his total disregard of what, let's say, the as he called it, the little cracker means to the Christian world and what it represents. And if you recall in the interview, he was asked whether or not he's ever asked for forgiveness or repentance or anything like that. And his comments were, no, I haven't, but I do go to service and I eat, you know, I drink the little bit of wine and I eat the little cracker. And I quite honestly, to me, that is a more of an in-depth look into his personality than the McCain comment.
Well, I think that's a very astute observation, Ken. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, it would seem to me that kind of question, you're speaking to evangelicals. Sorry, so that's the context. These are people who have been born again, for whom, like my cousin Lily, the minister in the Bronx, for whom Christ and redemption is a living thing. It is the ethos of why they are on this world, passing through to the next. And to kind of speak in that offhanded way, not smart. I mean, it certainly wasn't political. Maybe that's the charm. Maybe that's the charm. He obviously was unprepared for the question, but how can you be unprepared for that question in that context? It seems a bit unprofessional for a guy who is such a genius in every other regard. I hope it doesn't sound like I'm picking on him. I just want him to apologize.
Seven minutes after the hour, little Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Geraldo here. This isn't Geraldo, this is Noam, obviously.
You sound like Geraldo.
No, you do.
Trump on the Today Show. I'd like to hear Donald Trump. This is his immediate future is going to be these kinds of encounters. Everybody with any decent credentials that interviews Trump is going to be just as feisty, just as contentious, just as confrontational as Matt Lauer was this morning on the Today Show.
Well, I'm not a fan of John McCain. If you saw what I said and if you saw the press conference afterwards, Savannah and the media just has done such a false number, as usual. And
I like people that weren't captured. Would you say that to John McCain's face?
No, and then if you go on, Matt, see, that's what you don't do.
No, I said I'm using one exchange.
Excuse me, Matt, because you're the media and you do the same thing. The next sentence was, he is a war hero. I said that, but they never want to play it, and you don't want to play it.
Well, why would you say the first thing?
Excuse me.
Why would you say the first part?
Savannah started it off by saying, I said that he wasn't a war hero. I didn't say that.
We did run the part where you said he is a war hero. So please don't say that we didn't, because we did.
Well, then why did Savannah start off by saying, I said that he was not a war hero? I never said that. I said he was a war hero, Matt. So you misrepresent just like everybody else. Cheryl Atkinson did a major expose yesterday in the newspapers. She's highly respected. She said that Trump is being mistreated in this four times. He said that McCain is a war hero. I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with what he's doing on the border. He's terrible. And I do have a problem with the fact with the illegal immigration is a disaster. And he's doing a horrible job for the vets. Matt, I see the vets. They come to me. These are powerful, wonderful people. And they're crying. They don't know what to do. They're lost because of what we're doing. Frankly, illegal immigrants are treated better than many of our vets.
Illegal immigrants is not going to save you this time, Donald. It's not. Illegal immigrants, you could say it, you could sing it. It's not about immigrants. It's about insulting someone whose service to this nation should be revered unequivocally. You can hate John McCain's politics, and you don't disagree with most of his politics. I mean, he's a kind of middle-of-the-road Republican. He's a conservative in his own right. McCain has had other people attack his service. You know, every time I go through... Eric and I, we drive going road trips sometimes. Every time you go through a neighborhood, you go every town has like a Martin Luther King Boulevard and a Rosa Parks Boulevard. And Chris Rock, the comedian who I know from New Jersey, he says you never want to live on Martin Luther King Boulevard. He's so funny. It's irreverent, obviously. And if a white guy did it, it would be considered racist. But Chris Rock has a way of, cutting to the chase, and you don't want to live on Martin Luther King Boulevard in any town where you find one, according to Chris Rock. He did a similar irreverent routine about John McCain. This is from a few years ago, but we found it, about John McCain and his sacred service. So here is Chris Rock on John McCain.
McCain just got that old story, telling the same story for 40 f***ing years. He a war hero. He a war hero that got captured. There's a lot of guys in jail that got captured. I don't want to vote for nobody that got captured. I want to vote for the motherfucker that got away.
I wonder if that's where Trump got it. but it's one thing when Chris Rock does it. Chris Rock's not running for president. He's running for cheap laughs. And I think that it's really beyond the pale. And he's been so, it allows John McCain to do what he does best, be the victim, of this, the noble victim, the turn the other cheek person. He's not engaging. And all of the Republican opponents that are engaging Trump and he's the worst thing that ever happened. He should drop out of the race now. He's unfit to be commander in chief. They all sound self-interested. That's why when I'm coming at it, and this is, they say sometimes like with friends like that, who needs enemies? I don't want Trump to say that about me. But I want him to know that I really feel this now. I don't want to flog a dead horse here, but what's wrong with saying you're sorry, man? There's nothing wrong. But all right, I'm going to take calls on this. I'm starting to get a little bored with it, but I'll take calls a little more because there's such intense interest, and it has to resolve itself. I mean, he just can't go on dealing with every single interview he gives, whether it's for the Today Show or Channel 123 in Ames, Iowa. The first question he's going to be asked is about this until it is resolved. And it is heretofore unresolved. And here's Robert on Long Island. Thanks for calling, buddy.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I want to say something, I guess, kind of in a way defending Trump about a comment that's not being mentioned that he did say afterwards, which he's 100% right, is about McCain's treatment of the current veterans. People forget.
Well, tell me what that beef is, because I'm not sure that McCain has been negligent of veterans. Where does that come from?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Undoubtedly. I mean, you have to remember this. The debacle, the disaster situation, the uncovering of the VA situation.
Was in Phoenix. I understand that.
That was uncovered in Arizona. That's his district. I mean, obviously, he's involved with all these veterans groups. If he doesn't even know what's going on in his own district, how is he going to know what's going on anywhere else? I mean, also, John McCain, as you know, reported, this guy has never seen a battle he didn't want to start. I mean, this guy wanted to overthrow Assad. This guy wanted to – he wanted to send weapons to Vietnam. This guy is insane. This guy's a warmonger. I don't understand why people – they care for this man. This man is destructive.
Well, I appreciate that people disagree with some of John McCain's policies. But that's not what Donald Trump said. I mean, eventually he came to that. He came to I don't even know that the sitting senator bears the particular responsibility for the failure of the Veterans Administration, which is in the other party's purview, and it's part of the Obama administration. You blame the Obama administration for the failure of the veterans to the VA hospitals in Phoenix and elsewhere. I put that blame squarely on President Obama. I mean, don't you think Donald Trump, by blaming Senator John McCain for the VA's failures takes the spotlight off where it should be, the Obama administration for the care of the veterans in that particular jurisdiction. If you can prove that he was alerted and if he ignored the alerts on how they were, you know, fiddling with the books to make it appear that veterans were not waiting as long as they really were waiting for medical, crucial medical care. If you can prove that he was notified and still ignored it, that's one thing. But I haven't heard anything that substantive. To me, so far, all I've heard is the geographic coincidence that Senator McCain represents the state of Arizona and the Veterans Hospital in the state of Arizona was so horrible. You know, you've got to have a cause and effect there. I don't know what McCain did or did not do, but you've got to go the extra mile, don't you think? I mean, isn't that reasonable? All right, here's Steve in New York. What's up, Steve?
Donald Trump's comments just are illustrative of a contemptuous man and his absurdly overinflated sense of vanity, egotism, narcissism, whatever you want to call it.
I agree with that. It is that. It is that. It is, know, narcissism.
But it's typical of the larger national problem. When I look at all the prominent candidates, all of them are pathological vanity and egotism cases that are blind. They're opportunists.
You sound like a psychologist.
They bring ideology to... the average American doesn't want these people. That includes the president, includes Hillary Clinton. I keep hearing potential candidates using the imperial we these days. We this, we that. And I keep thinking, is this good for America? When is the population going to wake up that we have a bunch of candidates who feel a sense of entitlement to us? And that, whatever happened to the national modesty? I still remember candidates when I was a kid who didn't speak of themselves so much, but of
Jimmy
the national...
Carter was very modest. Who do you mean? Who did you like?
I remember Adlai Stevenson, who got nowhere. Even Eisenhower, who became president, and in the years since, in the Northeast area, was viewed as something of a fuddy-duddy. He still had greater personal modesty than anybody on the national scene today. Even Kennedy, when he spoke, was not an egotist. I keep thinking, you know, we would probably do better to have a slate of candidates that came from a kind of random national lottery.
I tell you, Lindsey Graham is the one whose policies, thanks, Steve, are the most in sync with mine now that I see them. Here's the problem I thought of, and Erica and I were talking about this, and Erica's very, you know, she's a very smart lady, and she said, my wife said, what happens if he loses his temper like this with Vladimir Putin? What happens if he loses his temper like this with the leader of China? You know, the problem with being so emotional, when you have that job, the consequences are way, way more important than the consequences of making a business deal, pulling a business. You can turn your back on a good business deal at a peak with the person, or maybe the person tried to chisel you out of 50 cents in a $50 million deal, whatever it is, and you tell them to go screw himself. But when you're dealing at the world level, where the fate of nations and the future of mankind hangs by the thread, can you afford to be that emotional, that passionate, that proud, that narcissistic? I don't know, man.
You don't think the minute, you know, let's say he actually makes it that far to the White House, that people will rise to that office once
they
get there?
They have, historically.
When they walk, right? When they walk in that front door, all of a sudden it hits them?
They have, historically. They have. You want to take that bet?
That he's making it to the White House? No.
No, not that bet. You want to take the bet that the office will moderate him?
Oh, I think it does to everybody who walks in there, yeah.
So you think that voters will be willing to bet on that, that the same person who goes against Matt Lauer and says, Savannah was being bad to me and this one was being bad to me and that kind of, you think he could take that when he negotiates with Putin? And let's say Putin tells him he's got, makes some insult, you know, the litany of Trump jokes. What happens if Putin does that? And then Donald hears about that. Now, Donald's going to start saying things about Putin.
Right.
I mean, can you imagine that?
It's a whole different thing, though. You think about the White House, there's so many advisors. I mean, he's working. This campaign is all about him right now. He runs the show. He probably doesn't take advice from too many people. Once you get in the White House.
He doesn't take advice from me.
Well, yeah, once you get in the White House, right, you got the cabinet meetings, you got people whispering in your ear all day long, so I think it's a different thing. But he's not making it there.
What if he, well, his chances are a lot better last week than this week.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Well, I think it's three strikes you're out. I think he gets one more.
One more?
One more, and then people will start turning the other way. I really believe that.
Maybe that'll be our editorial policy. He's got one more strike.
23 minutes after 11 o'clock, I'm going to get back to your calls at 866-HERALDO, 866-437-2536 momentarily. But did you happen to see over the weekend this incredible video from Fox Sports? It was broadcast live, the surfing event in Australia. And you have I guess the competition was in South Africa, but this was an Australian surfer, a professional surfer, Mick Fanning by name. So he's surfing there in South Africa, and all of a sudden a gigantic shark surfaces right on camera. You see it live. Here's the surfer. There's the shark with the giant fin. The guy is trying to defend himself on the surfboard. He turns around. He's punching the shark in the back. And the shark is taking away his surfboard. He's cracking the surfboard. And it is just until they finally get the guys on the jet skis to come and intervene. It was like the most amazing. And, you know, this is just what my wife did not have to see.
It's like a horror movie.
I mean, ever since Jaws, she's been afraid to take a bath. And so I bought this property in Puerto Rico that we're selling it now.
Right.
Because she won't go in the water.
Did you build her a pool?
I built her a pool, but we got to go over water to get to it.
Right.
It's an island.
Come on. So you're not going to Puerto Rico anymore?
Never can tell. Right, go by myself. Go ahead. You say, go, enjoy. Oh, but it's so amazing. I mean, the guy had amazing balls.
And the thing is, of course, it's so rare, these attacks. But the fact that they would get one on camera, live on TV, is really unbelievable.
You keep saying it's so rare, and then you hear about, this one lost his leg off North Carolina, this one. Anyway. Here's our buddy Ferris in Connecticut. What's up, Ferris? What are you thinking about?
Hello,
Ferris. You're on, buddy. What's up?
Well, what's up is Trump. Trump is up.
We know. Is he up or is he down?
He's up. This ices it for him, you see, because despite what's being reported in all the media, this ensures him the nomination. Because what it does is he's such a genius.
Ferris, this, if you pull me to there, it'll be the greatest con job in history. But I want you to go ahead. Now, Ferris is saying this cinches the presidential or the GOP nomination for Trump. Go ahead. Now, tell me how.
Exactly right. And this man's a genius. You know, you worked with him at the...
He is a genius, no doubt.
And see, he's got all this planned out. You talk about the next step. He's got the next five steps planned out, because what does this do? This draws out the attention to McCain's record of deficiency in the Senate. And make no mistake about it.
He's not running against McCain.
I beg your pardon?
He's not running against McCain. McCain's not running.
McCain became a story with Trump, and see, this is why it ices it. It's not the fact who's running against him. It's how strong Trump is with the people who are going to get him elected, like me, who are going to work for him. I'm a military intelligence officer, Geraldo. Okay, I know what it is to be a hero. I have a hero that I went to high school with. You went to school with Vinnie Simone.
Well,
I went
to
school
with
Whitney Ferguson. And Whitney Ferguson got his head blown off in Vietnam after being in country for three weeks. That's a hero. McCain is no hero. McCain got caught, okay?
Come on. McCain flew 23 combat missions from aircraft carriers over the most infested anti-aircraft in the history of the planet. 23 missions. Ferris, come on.
Trump doesn't back down, and that's who we want to elect, somebody who doesn't back down. And we're going to work for him. We're going to get the election fraud fixed out, Geraldo. You know the election frigging?
Yeah. Like, that's when every black person has a right to vote.
No. That's when what you have is you have a governor serving in Connecticut, my state of Fairfield, Connecticut, named Daniel P. Malloy, who's a mini-me for Obama, right? He's run by the same woman that runs Obama, which is Valerie Jarrett. And he does everything that Obama does. He's a mini-me. And the reason I bring that up is our governor serves illegitimately because the election results have not been certified.
All right, Ferris, I like your conspiracy theories, but it doesn't fly here. Another buddy. I should put Ferris and Stan on together. But go ahead, Stan, you're on now. What's up?
That guy needs to take an aspirin or something. He's got a lung. Anyway,
and Gino, we should put them all on.
Well,
Ferris, call back. I'm going to put Stan, Gino, and Ferris all on together.
Not me.
All right, go ahead, Stan.
Anyway, what's going
Gino,
to take
Gino, you're next. Get it warmed up. Go ahead, Stan.
No, what's going to take Donald Trump down is not his remarks on Hispanics. It's not his remarks on McCain. It will be his banking dealings, Geraldo. Nobody gets to the top of the real estate industry and not cut corners. The banking industry will be checked out by journalists and his dealings.
Well, that's interesting. I think that people have been checking him out, though, pretty harshly. And, you know, like, for instance, when the casinos started going bust, it became pretty clear, you know, first, and he had the beef with Rosie O'Donnell, remember, and everybody started checking those casino deals. And it turns out that he had only licensed his name, and it wasn't him that went bankrupt. You know, he's pretty savvy. I don't think you make $10 billion with the kind of scrutiny that he's been under. Like, Schneiderman?
Schneiderman,
is the AG.
That's right.
And he's after him for the Trump University.
Right. But what's become of that? I haven't heard much about it lately.
I haven't heard much about that, but I know that he was savaging Schneiderman. Schneiderman, right?
Yeah.
I don't know much about him. But he kind of dug in, and he's trying to dig into that Trump University stuff. I don't know what they're going to find. I don't know what they're going to find. I don't think that he doesn't strike me as a guy that cuts corners. It really doesn't. I've been around those kind of guys, and he just doesn't seem that kind of guy. He seems to live all that stuff kind of very publicly. I mean, it's not a public company, but he lives it right out loud. And you can see what Ferry Point, to attack Trump for putting this luxury golf course in the Bronx, what do you want? You want the garbage dump back?
Right.
You want the slum back?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so stupid. You got news for me?
I don't know. Do I have news for you?
No, I'm going to keep it another
newscast?
Minute.
Okay.
Sorry. Here's Robin Queens. What's up, Rob?
Hey, Geraldo. How you doing?
Good.
I, you know, just playing devil's advocate here. You know, you speak about not wanting to have somebody that's, you know, so quick to not apologize. You know, it could be a harsh negotiator. But, you know, I say that maybe that's exactly what we need. You know, after having an administration that'll, you know, bow to Arabic princes and maybe apologize more than they should have, you know, I think that we have to respect the man that creates an empire such as Trump's and his negotiating skills and tactics.
Well, you know, I think that you can appreciate all that and still demand of him that he apologize to the POWs. I don't think those things are mutually inconsistent. But Rob, thank you for your call. Thank you all for your calls. 866 Geraldo, we'll be back.
What do I say when it's all over? Sorry seems to be the hardest word. It's sad, so sad, with a sad, sad situation. And it's getting more and more absurd. So sad. Why can't we talk it over? Oh, it seems to me that sorry seems to be the hardest word.
How are you on saying you're sorry? I mean, when you screw up with Pam, what do you?
Well, yeah, yeah.
What do you do?
Usually just say I'm sorry. I'm not big flower guy or candy or anything like that.
So do you go to bed angry?
No, try not to.
Here I saw Trainwreck.
Right. Oh, I heard that's great.
Eric and I went to Trainwreck, the Amy Schumer movie. It is hilarious.
Really? I'll have to see it.
Coming from Mexico, and remember, Mexico ended with the five GIs slaughtered in Chattanooga. And then, you know, it was such a... You bearing all this, you know, this psychic... negative energy, and then to see that and to belly laugh, it was a wonderful release. It is a hilarious movie, and it was just so funny. I think the connection, I guess there's an apology scene in there. She says don't go to bed angry. I mean, but she's a slut and she's sleeping with everybody, and she falls in love with Bill Hader,
right,
from the Saturday Night Live. And it is really, I just, LeBron James was brilliant in the movie. Trainwreck, it's called. Right. See it if you want to laugh, if you want to, you know, an escape for a while. April, hi. How's saying you're sorry in your family?
Hello.
Hi. How do you say good, that I'm sorry in your family?
Well, the thing about Donald Trump is when he thinks he's right, he thinks he's right. All right, this is okay in certain situations. I think the problem with Mr. Trump is he wants to be president because this is honorable. It's his ego. That's important for him. But he would be much better. He could serve the country in honor if they found a position with him in the Republican Party somewhere where he served.
Like what? What would you have him do? Like Department of the Interior?
On some, maybe helping the veterans. He feels sorry for them. He loves their service, what they did. He said, I heard him say that they're crying, that they're being forgotten. I think his heart is in the right place. His brains are in the right place for business, but it has to be in a certain situation where he can control himself and is not perceived differently in what he's trying to say.
If he was on the phone right now, April, what would you say to him?
I'll say, Mr. Trump, you're a piece of a beautiful puzzle. Find a piece that would appreciate your gifts.
And what would you advise him then? Not to run for president?
Places where people have to stand up and push people around and say what's done and get it done. That's why
maybe he could be like the ombudsman for the little guy.
Not for the little guy. The government's hard to work. You need a tough guy like him to do it.
All right. I hear you. That is brilliant analysis. I like that. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Elsa. My machine's not working. Julia. Hi, Julia in Westchester.
Hi. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning to you.
You have a tremendous heart. And I wanted to tell you, people like middle class me are not voting for Trump because he's perfect. We're voting for him because he will stand up for Americans and against the establishment. We know he loves America. He proves himself over and over. And with Trump, you know what you're getting. And I think there are so many things we have to deal with, like education and fraud and politics and lobbying overseas problems. I think he will deal with it without having to prove anything to anybody. He is who he is.
So
you forgive him this
mistake?
This mistake, I think, look, I think John McCain, I was upset with John McCain when Jan Brewer in Arizona tried to put in some laws to find out who the illegals were. She tried to make some laws local to her state, and they sent 161 lawyers to Arizona to put that down, and it worked. And I think that kind of thing is what is irritating people. I think if he can find a way to say he's sorry, I would like that. But I would also like him to be elected president.
Okay, Julia. I'm sure that your words are music to Donald's ears. Incidentally, I'm going to be talking about this on the 5. That'll be interesting, won't it? Me and Eric Bowling.
Have you seen
nose?
Eric since you threatened to punch him out on TV last
no,
week?
No, I have not.
Have you talked to him since the last time?
I have
time?
Not.
So this could be kind of interesting tonight. You think he'll come with a bodyguard or will he just be there alone?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was, an NBC crew covering the tunnel, El Chapo, and the town of Toluca there. When you get outside of, Mexico City is very dangerous also, but I want to put it in context. If you're like a regular, ordinary Mexican person walking around, Mexico City is a great place. It's a lot of things happening. It's a vibrant city, a wonderful climate. It's as high as Denver, so you get more of a Pacific Northwest kind of climate. It was in the 60s, for instance, when I was there this week. I got to Canada, it was in the 90s. I got here, it was in the 90s. I had to go to Canada in Toronto. Kimmy Gantz, Erica's friend from camp, they're all turning 40. So they've been going to 40th birthday parties in Chicago and Cleveland, where they're all from originally. Here in New York, Erica had the big party that you attended. And then this was the last of the 40-year-olds. But it was 90 degrees there and 90 degrees here. But it's so dangerous in Mexico for high rollers. Nobody takes taxis anymore. You take a taxi in Mexico, you don't know that the cab driver is in cahoots with some kidnapping organization. He drives not down where you want to go, drives down some other street. You get nabbed, they hold you, and then they send your ear to your mother or your wife, and you've got to pay up.
What was with the NBC crew, though?
So the NBC crew is in Toluca. The three motorcycle guys, they did it to three different victims. One was the NBC crew. The other two were Mexican crews. They surrounded three bikes. They pulled right in front of the car. The other two pull up alongside it. They smash out the windows and the windshield. They terrify everybody by smashing them out. They grabbed all of their equipment. They jacked them. They robbed them. They didn't keep them for ransom. But it was so dangerous.
Jeez.
But I said, and I'm not bragging, that that could never happen to me. Because we are, when we travel around, we're like what you're afraid of. You know, we're like the gang.
Why? What are you doing?
Because when we travel in that context, thanks to the caution of my employer, Fox News, we are a very formidable little contained unit of hardcore veterans, and we're not going to be outgunned by any motorcycle bandits. I mean, if they want a gunfight, if they want to, you know, then we're the right people for them. But they don't go for the hard targets. They go for the soft targets, unless it's a political assassination, unless it's El Chapo and has a grudge. That's why I really think, and I didn't really have a chance to say this, when El Chapo was sending tweets to Donald Trump, you know, you got to understand that. How do you get out of prison, El Chapo, with the tunnel and everything else? Not only is he a billionaire who could bribe anybody, what happens if you refuse to take his bribe? You're making $200 a week. I mean, $200 a month. You're a Mexican prison guard. Not only do you have the $50,000 or the $100,000 bribe offered to you, but you also have the absolute, not, it's not a threat. It's the absolute declaration that if you don't take this bribe, we're going to kill your wife. We're going to cut your kids' ears off. We're going to burn your house down. We're going to kill your parents. And the absolute ability to deliver, because he pays the gunmen enough so that they're like Sunni Muslim extremists with the suicide trucks. You know, they're on a one-way mission. You know, and he's got that power. So I think that he's going to be a very disruptive force. I mean, the whole government of Mexico right now is disrupted by this. You know, it's a dysfunctional government to begin with. And this thing has totally upended the entire government of Mexico, this escape of the drug fugitive. All right, I'll give you some last thoughts about that. Maybe, Michael, if you could hang in. I noticed you're a veteran. I'd like to chat with you from Brooklyn. But hang in there, if you would. Well, let me get him right now on the line. Let me get him a promise to stay on. So you okay, Michael? Can you hang in?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm all right.
Okay, hold on.
6 minutes to high noon. Michael, the veteran from Brooklyn, is on the line. Michael, what are you thinking about?
How you doing, Geraldo?
Thanks for calling, buddy.
You know, I'm listening to you since you started your show this morning. I'm a veteran from 1964 to 1967, a river rat. I did the Mekong Delta. You take a man like Donald Trump, no more fluff. I've had it with the fluff. We need a decision maker in there. As crude as he could be polished by whoever's around him. You know, in my own business, I've been called into human resources for calling somebody a horse's A. And I caught all the flack for it, but when the job has got to get done, who do they call? Me. This job's got to get done. Who do we need somebody like Donald Trump in there to make the hard decision, put it in action, and get it done with. You know, we stopped Patton from going into Germany, didn't we? Look what happened. The war went on for so much longer. We need somebody with a set like he had.
All right, brother. I appreciate your service, my God, more than I could tell you, and I appreciate the call. Thank you. Mark Kuby, you want to respond to that? How resilient some of the support for Donald Trump is?
Well, I was actually interviewed Donald Trump, John McCain, rather, many years ago, and I basically told him that he was a war criminal, with all due respect to the service of the veteran guy who was busy killing peace and freedom-loving people in Vietnam and the country that we invaded that had never attacked us. But put that aside, what Trump doesn't get, what he just doesn't get, is McCain is not a hero because he was dropping bombs on people from 50,000 feet, and he's certainly not a hero because he was...
He wasn't at 50,000 feet. 20, he was 000, at 1,500 feet.
Fine, dropping bombs on little people down there like ants. That doesn't make you a hero. What made him a
hero... He's dropping bombs on the North Vietnamese army.
And civilians and whoever else happened to be down there, dude, like napalm and stuff, burning people alive. Oh, yeah, we did that. Anyway, he's a hero because of the way he did time. the way he endured captivity. Like all of my
clients.
Does
that make it any less?
All of my clients who managed to go to prison and come out intact, unbowed, strong after surviving that, all my convict clients who do that are heroes. And John McCain is exactly the same kind of hero.
That's so perverse for you to say
that. What do you mean it's perverse?
Because your clients go to jail for doing something selfish like dealing drugs. John McCain went to jail and was tortured because he was serving his country.
He was killing innocent people, Geraldo.
He was a war hero.
He was a war criminal, Geraldo. I mean, Trump had the disaster part of the Vietnam War, right? You were out protesting the war.
I was.
You didn't go, did you?
I did not go.
What was your excuse?
My excuse was I didn't want to go.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was good. Donald's was bone spurs. Fine. But let's face it. It was an immoral war.
I got married.
Horrible...
I was deferred.
Oh, right.
It used to be a deferment.
Yeah. There
then I got married and married and married.
And you're still getting deferments.
And I'm still going to war now.
Right. Now it's domestic war.
Oh, no. I don't have those. Not me. I've got peace on earth. So do you think he survives this quickly?
Of course he does. Listen, you heard Mike the Veteran. I mean, it was like a bumper sticker. Giddy up and get it done. We need decisions made. We need leadership. I mean,
Kubi says Trump survives this. I say he must apologize.
Yeah.
I say some things are sacred. Curtis and Kubi are next. No, Layton, thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you. See you right here tomorrow.